Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Kavanagh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Continuing our discussion against racism, I want to talk a little bit further about dialect.
Dialect is, you know, the way you speak. We all have a dialect. I just said Appalachia. A lot of people would say Appalachia. You know, it has to do with your accent. It has to do with how you pronounce things. It can vary depending on your culture, where you were raised, whether you speak another language, or any number of factors. And I can attest to that because a lot of times I default to the way my high school Latin teacher pronounced words in Latin. I kind of default to what I think is the proper Latin pronunciation for the derivatives of what words that were originally Latin, and I'm usually wrong, because that's not really how you pronounce the word in the modern time. In writing, authors often use what's called I dialect, a non-standard spelling and phrasing in writing that conveys a character's speech patterns. I don't easily use the word I dialect. I just say dialect. So if I'm saying dialect and you are a student of literature or you're in a writing program and you know I'm talking about I dialect, good for you. That's great. I just call it dialect. It's effective when it's used for characterization or establishing a setting. And I made a short list of some, just off the top of my head, some examples of classic literature that have dialect in them. Charles Dickens wrote a lot of dialect. Almost any novel of his you pick up, you'll find dialect. To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, The Joy Luck Club by Amy Tan, Mark Twain, famously Mark Twain in America anyway, his Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn books, but really almost any of his novels have dialect in them. Train Spotting by Irving Welsh, Angela's Ashes by Frank McCourt, Lonesome Dove by Larry McMurtry, The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, A Clockwork Orange by Anthony Burgess, Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw, The Color Purple by Alice Walker, Finnegan's Wake by James Joyce, and really anything by Joyce, Only the Dead Know Brooklyn by Thomas Wolfe, Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte, and the list for Tony Cade Bambara is pretty long. Gorilla My Love, War of the Walls 1976 My Love, that collection includes Blues Ain't No Mockingbird, The Lesson, The Seabirds Are Still Alive collected stories, and that includes A Girl's Story, and The Salt Eaters. I'm going to talk a little bit more about Tony Cade Bambara in just a minute, but the narrative voice in literature usually aspires to speak in concert with the reality it illustrates, and so that's where dialect is both sometimes held in high esteem and criticized as being prejudiced sounding or racist sounding. It doesn't necessarily limit to African American or Black American authors or persons of color in stories whose characters speak in dialect, but it's certainly relevant to discuss in terms of racism against Blacks. So African American authors historically have criticized, using dialect and as part of the narrative voice, they don't, because that discussing the significance of speaking in so-called standard American English in comparison with what's sometimes called African American English or Black English vernacular. So that's always in classic literature in books like Gone with the Wind and Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe, the Mark Twain, again, Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn books, a lot of To Kill a Mockingbird, even books by African-American authors, Color Purple, and The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, Color Purple by Alice Walker. But even, you know, it's the controversy continues. Some people are for dialect and some people are against it. Toni Cade Bambara has made a really important contribution to the discussion by choosing to write in the language of her culture and community. Most of her stories are told from a first-person point of view and are written in a rhythmic, urban, Black English. Her female protagonists and narrators dominate in her writing, which was informed by her own radical feminism and firmly placed inside Black American culture with its dialect, oral traditions, and even jazz influences. So, you know, this dialect, which seemed to, you know, go through periods of being marginalized in writing, in literature, she really revived that a lot and contributed towards the efforts to salvage the cultural identity of Black Americans. This is a perspective that that most people take towards her writing. I feel like this is a valid point. She had a really good understanding of her characters and the stories she wanted to tell. Obviously, she's very talented, and her integration of non-standard linguistic features into literature really worked well as an insightful response to just the marginalization of Black American culture in general. It proved the strength and power of language in portraying the diverse realities of people from different places and different times. And so, you know, that is what I wanted to say a little bit about dialect. Dialect, again, can help in literature to establish that a character has a different background or there's something different about them than other characters in the story. They can be more interesting, they can be marginalized in the story, but they also, it definitely helps you, you know, people always say they escaped into a book, you know, they just lost track of time and just kept reading, and dialect can help with that dialect, and it can really set that place and time in your mind for a lot of books that we've looked at in this project, and just classic literature in general. Pygmalion, I think I mentioned Pygmalion, George Bernard Shaw's play that was adapted to the film, 1964 film, My Fair Lady, that everybody loves so much, but Eliza Doolittle has a Cockney accent that if you read the book, I challenge you to easily understand what she's saying. I, you know, even having studied linguistics, it is like phoneme by phoneme, I'm piecing it out what in the world she's saying. And George Bernard Shaw did a really great job of writing in dialect. Lonesome Dove has a lot of characters in it that have a folksy kind of expressions in their dialect of the American West, from various areas in the American West. To Kill a Mockingbird is a pretty famous example of a book that has dialect that can be problematic because the characters and the setting of that story, time period-wise. One of the books I struggled with in my little list when I first read The Joy Luck Club by Amy Tan, I read that long before I was in my PhD program, and I really struggled with the dialect that Amy Tan uses, and she uses dialect and language to illustrate a barrier between generations, the mother and her daughter, and it's really effective. In my experience, it almost halted the flow of the story for my brain to have to, you know, read the dialect of the mother and kind of make it make sense
in my mind because it was a little, it was unfamiliar to me. And I think that that type of contrast can be really, really a great example in characterization, character development in stories. You can also help, dialect can also help establish setting, and I think Mark Twain is probably the most famous example of that. He had his characters Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer, Injun Joe, and Jim, the former slave, that really had dialect that was, in today's modern world, very problematic. But at the in the setting of the time period that the stories take place in, and even when Mark Twain was writing, his use of dialect was just revered in his stories, that people just thought he was the best writer of dialect out there. Jim's, the slave Jim's dialect represents speech that Twain himself described as the Missouri Negro dialect. It's a, you know, it was popular in literature of that time period in books like Gone with the Wind and Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe. So he wasn't the only one doing it. Neither was Margaret Mitchell, neither was Harriet Beecher Stowe, neither were a lot of the people who were writing then and who, even in later books, use a similar dialect. It makes most of us very uncomfortable today, and we would try to look at these examples when we are going to be talking about the books that we chose for this year, examples of dialect and how we feel about them and the use of them are going to come up. So just wanted to do a quick little discussion of that before we dive back into our actual four selected nice books. Next up, we'll hear from Sarah E., and she's going to be discussing her take on why we should read books that have problematic content. She delves into that pretty thoroughly, and I think we can all benefit from her point of view on that. And then also, we'll have a little bit of discussion about censorship in a way, in terms of the recent statements made by HBO Max for removing Gone with the Wind as in their film library until they can reestablish it in their lineup with some historical context and discussion and sort of denouncing the film's depictions of racism and everything that is problematic in the film. Again, I want to stress that Community Education Arts is looking at the novel Gone with the Wind in our NICE project. It's kind of inevitable to end up discussing the film a little bit, and that's true every year for us. If there are film or TV adaptations of the books that we choose to look at, we do end up, you know, discussing those a little bit. This year in particular, that's going to be that's going to be inevitable because our books are Dracula, Little Women, Jane Eyre, and Gone with the Wind. And of those, Gone with the Wind is the only one that's only had basically one adaptation, the film. I don't really count the sequel book, Scarlet, and the ensuing movie that came from that because Margaret Mitchell didn't write them. But Little Women, Dracula, and Jane Eyre have had innumerable, I'm not sure of the number of TV and film adaptations. So we do inevitably end up discussing adaptations of some of the novels that we choose, the works of literature that we choose for NICE. So that's going to come up a little bit. Onward. So up next we'll have Sarah E. discussing a little bit about why we should continue to read and discuss and be aware of books that contain problematic content. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.